And welcome back to the Believe in NC State podcast. I am your host, David Thompson. Thanks again for listening. This is the podcast all about NC State football. And like always, there's plenty to talk about. Today's show, I have two guests for the price of one. First, you'll hear my conversation with UCLA beat writer Mike Regalado, and we break down the December 28th Holiday Bowl in San Diego, a game that we've now all been waiting for almost a month, as NC State goes for its 10th win for only the second time in program history. And after that, we'll have a chat with our very own USA Today Network recruiting reporter, Chapel Fowler, as we'll break down the early signing period and look at the 12 players that NC State signed last week. And before we get all into that, let's pay some bills. The Believe in NC State podcast is brought to you by Bet Online. Head to the new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code BELIEVE50 to receive your bonus. From basketball, football, NHL, boxing, basically any sport where you can bet money in, BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports. BetOnline, it's where the game starts. The Believe in NC State podcast is also brought to you by Lightbox. Say goodbye to dull gifts. Lightbox lab-grown diamonds are the brightest gift of the year. Using cutting-edge technology and innovative techniques, they've cracked the science of sparkle, creating the highest quality lab-grown diamonds you can find at a light price, $800 per carat. They have the same chemical makeup of natural diamonds, but just are grown in a lab. Because of their process, they can relate stones in a blush pink and beautiful blue, as well as classic white. Lightbox lab-grown diamonds are the gift they'll never want to take off, priced so they won't have to. They really do make an outfit sparkle. Let me do that slightly better. I'm so sorry, Lightbox. I'm not great at ad reads. Visit lightboxjewelry.com to add sparkle to your holiday shopping. That's lightboxjewelry.com. Lightbox diamonds, never a dull moment. I like on these ads that they write dot com instead of .com because I'm 80 years old and I wouldn't know how to do that. But anyway, I digress. Thanks again. This is the Believe in NC State podcast. I'm your host, David Thompson. Let's get into our conversation with UCLA beat writer Mike Regalado. All right, I'm here with Mike Regalado from the Bruin Report. He's beat writer for UCLA Athletics, all athletics, I'm guessing?
Mostly football and men's and women's basketball.
Okay.
But Occasionally I'll be asked to cover, gymnastics or softball or baseball. So
Sure, fair enough. That's cool. So I think kind of the hot topic coming into this game is, you know, the fear of, will we have a game? And I know there's been, you know, some issues with UCLA basketball, but I guess what's the sense that you're getting, you know, if there's fear around the program? We just got off the, you know, we just did some Zoom calls with the NC State players and they talked about, you know, they've been wearing masks even more. Everyone's being really careful. They're having more conversations about it. What are you hearing on your side?
Well, both the men's and women's basketball teams have had to cancel games that happened last week or games that are supposed to be upcoming. So three each, which will basically end their non-conference. Anyway, that's another basketball conversation. But the fact that they did that because of COVID protocols within both programs. And the thing with the basketball teams is that they share the same facility. Football is next to it, but, you know, albeit separate. But still, they're taking extra precautions as well, especially with a lot of these cases popping up last week, especially you heard throughout the NFL, NHL, NBA.
Everywhere.
if baseball was going on, they'd probably be doing it too. So yeah, it's just kind of COVID madness again, but hopefully, you know, it stays on track to have this Holiday Bowl because, you know, we did talk to the players and they said that they're not necessarily taking extra precaution as far as, you know, bubbling up, if you will, but they are being aware of where they're going, what they're doing, who they're interacting with and stuff like that. So, you know, it definitely is serious, but you know, they especially at the upperclassmen want to get to this bowl game. They've been wanting to go to a bowl game for quite a while, especially after, you know, three losing seasons, unexpected in the Chip Kelly tenure. So they really want this to happen. And it sounds as if they're doing what they can to limit the spread of COVID. But, you know, we'll see. Anything can happen. One person gets infected, you start in the weight room, and then boom, it's everywhere. So we'll see. We'll see. We're a week out.
Is there, I guess, disappointment in the Chip Kelly tenure here so far at UCLA? I know there's excitement now that, you know, they made this bowl game. It's the first one, I think, since the 2017 Cactus Bowl. But yes, the first one since he's been the head coach. You know, how much has he done to really flip that narrative? Or is it, he's still kind of, or fans still sort of undecided on him?
It's divisive. There are Chip Kelly supporters and there are people who wanted Chip Kelly fired last year. And it has been disappointing considering what he did at Oregon, going to a national championship, having the blur, and then he comes to UCLA and says, yeah, I'm going to do something completely different, and has three wins in the first season, four wins in the second season, three out of seven wins. So he, percentage wise, he got closer last year. And then he actually, you know, he does finally have a winning season, 8-4 so far with a bowl berth, but that's still not good enough for a lot of fans. You know, some of them are expecting you know, they're saying it's year four, he shouldn't just be getting eight wins. And it's like, yeah, understandably, you know, that's fine, but you got to look at the progression, where he's come from, what he's done to turn this team into what it is now. Like offensively, I think this is probably one of the best offensive teams in the nation. Defensively, not so much. So there's that. That's the other big problem too, is, you know, the issues with the defense. They've been sub 100 on national rankings and statistics collectively over the last 4 years. And even though the defense got better this year, and I saw a lot of improvement, especially in the last three games of the season, it's still not a good resume to put out there to say that, you know, this is the defense that we want. For me, I've been saying that with UCLA's innovative offense, they need something compatible to that. They need something complementary. They need to play a little bit faster, a little bit more aggressive than that. And they have done that. It's just not, it doesn't seem like a good fit right now.
Mm. So, I mean, what's the big issues with the defense?
Player development, roster management, playing players out of place. You know, you earlier in the season, and actually this is something that we've seen in previous seasons, where quarterbacks will play like 10 yards off of their receivers. And it's like, what are you doing? You're giving them like way too much of a cushion. And then sure enough, they run up, boom, 3 yard here and there. They juke a little bit, get a few more yards off to contact. And it's like, who didn't see that? You know, we saw this from, you know, from home, you know, from the press box. How are the coaches not seeing this? But they have been a lot more aggressive. Their pass rush has been a lot more fierce. They don't just have one guy. They don't have one solid pass rusher, one guy that can go out and just make the tackles behind the line of scrimmage. They have several guys distributing the job amongst, you know, several players, linebackers, defensive linemen. So it's very aggressive up front. The pass defense has been, you know, an issue as well. Just one-on-one coverage is not great. Especially if you go against very talented, you know, receivers. It's putting UCLA's secondary, you know, in a bind, especially if you don't double up or put an extra guy out there. So it's just, it's situational, but it just hasn't been enough to show that this could be an elite UCLA team. And honestly, I believe that if UCLA had a much better defense, they would be elite. They would probably be 10-2 right now, if anything. But, you know, what ifs, you know, they don't count. This is where we're at. The UCLA has a good offense led by Chip Kelly and Dorian Thompson-Robinson. It's just defense needs to get a little bit better.
So what makes Dorian Thompson-Robinson such a special player? I know he's a dual threat guy, and NC State has dealt with a few of those this season, but you know, what kind of makes him an upper echelon kind of player?
You know, for me, it's the fact that he's a fighter. You know, he got a lot of flack in the first 3 years. Oh, he's not a Division I quarterback. You know, he only played quarterback 1 year of high school, you know, put in the secondary guy who hasn't played any, the second string quarterback who hasn't played any. It's like, okay, all of you guys who aren't at practice, not seeing these players, you know, you're just, and I get it. They're upset that there are not more wins and there are more losses and that there are mistakes, but DTR has grown every single year. And this has been a, you know, really good year for him. And it comes right as he's trying to make his decision to possibly go pro. He's very athletic.
Has he made a decision yet?
No, he's, and this is interesting about a lot of the upperclassmen. They're not only one, Otito Bonilla, the defensive lineman. He's the only one that has said that he's preparing for the NFL, which he hasn't flat out said, I'm not playing in the Holiday Bowl, but it's, you know, it's written on the wall.
It's implied. There's a similar situation with the Akeem Ekwonu for NC State, who hasn't said it, but you're like, you're a potential top 10 guy. Are you really going to play in this game?
Yeah, exactly. And there are, but the thing is, there are a lot of upperclassmen who can do that, who have the ability to jump to the NFL if needed and prepare for it. But having only Otito be the only one say, yeah, I'm going to step back from this one, that's awesome for the upperclassmen. And I think it's mostly because, like I said, this is their first bowl game under Chip Kelly. They want to play in this bowl. They want to prove something. They want to get to that ninth win. So it's good that the majority of them seem to be waiting on their decision, including DTR. But, you know, going back to him really quickly, he's just, his decision-making has been a lot better. 2 years ago, he was not very good in securing the ball. interceptions, fumbles. Last year, he improved it. This year, I don't know how many fumbles lost he had, but he only had 6 interceptions. Much better compared to what he's done in the past. But he's been able to sling the ball around and use his legs. Obviously, you got that. I don't know if you've seen it, but there's that iconic hurdle over the USC defender, you know, into the touchdown. And looking at that live, it was like, oh my God, that is such a marquee play for a marquee game. Excuse me. So yeah, he can surprise you, you know, and he's down to earth too. You know, he has a little bit of swagger, but he doesn't shove it in people's faces. You know, he'll celebrate with his team and himself, but he's not going to, you know, rub it in people's faces. You know, he's always a class act.
I think there was a lot of upset NC State fans just because of the travel and the cost that it, you know, and I had to buy a plane ticket to get to San Diego, and, you know, East Coast, West Coast is not cheap, particularly around this time of year. You know, how do you feel like this fan base is going to make the trip? Not the NC State fan base, the UCLA fan base. Are they going to be able to make this feel like a home game?
That's a toss up too. because of the COVID situation. People are like, should I, shouldn't I?
Right.
I've also people say that, wow, tickets are expensive for this. You know, it's kind of ridiculous. But others are like, I don't care. This is the first bowl game. I want to go. I want to go out of town. I want to see this team play one more time. I want to see, you know, root for all the upperclassmen. So I'm hoping, you know, but even still, I love games, neutral site games, bowl games where it is half and half. Mm-hmm. So that would be pretty impressive to see the North Carolina State fans, you know, blue on one side, red on the other. That I think, you know, makes for a, you know, great atmosphere. So I'm hoping UCLA could travel. I mean, it's only 2 hours. excuse me. I understand, you know, what you're saying, you know,
right,
flying across the country, but this is a 2-hour road trip. Excuse me. This, you know, UCLA traditionally doesn't travel well, but there's reason to celebrate, if you will. And I think a lot of fans are looking at that as a reason to get down to San Diego.
Well, so two questions, and there's no reason why I can't ask this separately, but I got caught on my own mind thoughts here. But one, have you ever watched a game at Petco Park? Is it weird watching a football game at a baseball stadium? And then also, what would this mean when ultimately mean for the program, just kind of going forward?
I have not. I walked by Petco Park last summer when I was visiting San Diego. The cool thing about it is that it's right next to the Gaslamp District. Sorry, I always get that mixed up. Gaslamp District, which is a strip of bars, restaurants, shops, kind of like a promenade sort of situation. So definitely, you know, win or lose afterwards, you know, people should be, you know, partying, you know, having a good time. But no, it is a beautiful stadium. And it is kind of weird sitting right there in that area. But I've never seen a game there, nor have I ever seen a football game inside a baseball stadium. They had the, it changed so many names, but up in San Francisco, the Bay Area, they had the Almond Bowl, I think it was. And that was a horrible situation because not only do you have a football field on a baseball stadium, but because of the limited room, both teams had to be on one sideline. It was like, what? So at the 50-yard line, you're like, this team. So if your team's at the end zone over there, you can't be, it was just a horrible mess. But this one, you know, I am looking forward to. Although, let me tell your North Carolina listeners and viewers and fans, check the weather. San Diego at this time is it's great, sunny California, but it's deceiving. You walk in the sun, you're like, oh, this is nice. You get in the shadow and it's all of a sudden 20 degrees below zero. It's crazy. And especially with a 5 p.m. kickoff, this is going to go up until like 8 p.m. Definitely bring a sweater, extra jacket, you know, whatever you do to stay warm. But it's not going to be hot down there in sunny San Diego. But as far as a win for the program, I think this will be huge. One, it'll give UCLA finally that win over a ranked opponent, over a team with a winning record. It'll get them to 9 wins, the first time in the Chip Kelly era. And it'll, you know, so they won 3 games out of 7. That's just under 50%. This, you know, 9 wins out of 13 games, that says something. And that will obviously help the team out in recruiting. It'll help momentum going forward to next year. And, you know, it's just a good sign. You know, a lot of people say that this is just an exhibition game, which it might be. But at the same time, both teams are going to be participating for a reason. Like you said, there are some players on NC State that are, you know, they're looking forward to this, just like UCLA. You have one guy that's opted out. UCLA's had one guy that's opted out. So it depends. This isn't a game where it's like 4 or 5 guys are like, yeah, I'm going to get ready for the NFL draft or, you know, whatnot, or transfer. This is a game that these two teams seem to be taking seriously. Mm-hmm. And why not? You know, after like the COVID season, some sort of normalcy. But let's hope COVID just, you know, backs away for this game. Let it happen and let the student athletes, you know, especially the upperclassmen, you know, have one final hurrah if that is the case for them.
So how do you see this game ultimately playing out?
This, I think, is going to be a really fun game. It's going to be a shootout. Looking at, I haven't dived deep into NC State, just a little bit over the last week. That obviously is not enough to analyze them over the course of this season, but also, you know, I'm a big stats guy. And just seeing what they do and how they distribute the ball in the pass, that's going to be interesting. And if they can get in between the seams and, you know, get the reads on UCLA's defense, I have a feeling that NC State is going to put up a ton of yards. So that's going to be UCLA's responsibility on defense to limit, because I don't think they're going to be able to stop the passing attack of North Carolina State. Same thing for UCLA's offense. Like I said, I think they're a dynamic offense, one of the best in the nation, and they can do it on the ground and through the air. they, you know, obviously DTR is a dual threat quarterback. He can run all over the field, but then you have a guy like Zach Charbonnet, who's had 700 yard rushing games this season. You have Britton Brown, who's averaging, what was it? I think something like 17 yards per carry. So the running game is super effective, and especially the way that the offensive line operates. I would not put it past Chip Kelly to do something completely new, formations we've never seen, because that's what he does. You know, like even sometimes in the press box, we'll be like, what kind of formation is that? What is he doing down there? You know, it's like, and it shocks us. So definitely if it's new to us who are covering it, it's definitely new to the opponent. So expect the unexpected with Chip Kelly's formations and his offensive attacks. But yeah, I think this is going to be a shootout. You know, no disrespect to NC State's defense or UCLA's defense, but I just think both offenses are going to have, you know, a bit of a field day. So I think this comes out to, you know, last man standing, last team standing.
Give me a prediction. I'm going to put you on the spot.
I haven't even thought of it. You know, let's, God, that's tough. I'm going to say UCLA 41, North Carolina State 40, just because that's initial. I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be a high scoring. So yeah, that's where I'm at initially. Okay. Initially. That might change.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Well, Mike, thank you so much for your time and really appreciate it. And you'll be at the game, I'm guessing. So I'll get to say hello to you. Cool. Well,
yes. Yes, indeed. So
can't wait for that. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. All right.
All right, this is my conversation with Chapel Fowler. Hope you guys enjoy. Just to let you know, we had this conversation before the actual early signing period, but nothing really changed from the next day. So all of this still very much applies. I hope that you enjoy. All right, I am here with our very own Chapel Fowler, the North Carolina statewide recruiting reporter for the USA Today Network. Chapel, how are you doing, man?
Good. Feels good to say our. I feel really at home and familiar right now. So,
yeah, it's nice when you can actually pull within our own network of our guys and be like, hey, I want to talk to someone. You don't have to go through all the hoops. I can just be like, I can text you and say, hey, you have to do this, and there's nothing you can do about it. So, ha.
You probably need to go through my PR person next time just to be safe. But yeah, we'll let it slide this time.
Okay. All right. Who is your PR person? You? You with like a British accent?
Sure. Yeah, I like that.
So I wanted to bring you on today to talk about the NC State upcoming recruiting class, kind of the things you're hearing, the guys, you know, you're impressed with, and even a little look into the future. So first off, when is National Signing Day? When should we expect for a lot of these guys to ink their names?
Yeah. So the early signing period, which has become a pretty frequent time for most everybody in classes to sign, that's going to be next Wednesday through next Friday. So that's the 15th through the 17th of December. That's the first time a kid can sign a binding national letter of intent. Anybody who's enrolling early, coming to their school in January, which is a more frequent thing now than it used to be, anybody doing that is going to sign in December regardless. Kids could also sign in December and not enroll early, really up to them. And then March through April, that whole month, March 1st through April 1st, is the quote unquote regular signing period. So there will be a few kids probably at most schools that sign in that period too. But early signing period is going to be the majority of your enrollees at NC State, at UNC, anywhere really, with the way college football is now.
And I find the early signing day really took a lot of like the drama out of, I guess, what it used to be like February 4th. You got five or six hats on the table, that kind of thing, which don't get me wrong, I like the drama, but it feels like obviously it changed the way that coaches had to recruit and a lot more during the season, the high school football season than outside of it. Is that something that you've seen, that it changes recruiting tactics, or is it just a different date?
Yeah, I'll give the addendum. You're right. It's February through April February 2nd through April 1st. Got my days mixed up. I'm in basketball mood. But fun. Yeah, it definitely has. if you've seen the video of like, my favorite one is like Jabril Peppers doing like the slam poetry. Like I can see it all now before he commits to Michigan. Like that's all in February and stuff. But no, it's definitely different. Like you said, it kind of has taken off the pressure, not made it as epic, but at the same time, you know, kids getting in early enrolling, you know, that's often, you know, a really easier way to get on the field as opposed to enrolling over the summer. You know, early enrollees, they just have the sheer time and the reps to actually contribute earlier. And that, you know, that's played out at a few schools this fall. So there's some benefits to it as well. But yeah, early signing period is definitely the move now. And especially with like transfer portal and such, you know, you might as well, you know, lock yourself in before, you know, your school sees a 3-year starter from a, you know, a Big Ten school in the portal and thinks, you know, it might be better to have that guy than a high school senior. So you're kind of, you know, ensuring that you're going to be where you want to be and not taking any risks by doing that early time.
So what I've seen is that, at least for this upcoming class, NC State has 12 guys as of right now that are kind of like, I guess you would call hard commits, or that there's not a lot of anxiety about them. You know, highlight a few of those guys that you think, you know, could make an impact in their first couple of years. You know, who's got you kind of, you know, excited?
Yeah, you're correct. 12 verbal commits right now. And, you know, the 2-4 stars obviously jump out there, both in-state guys, both good ones to pull over other Power 5 schools. Michael Allen, the running back from J.H. Rose, he's actually playing for a state championship tomorrow, and I'll be there and have some coverage from that. So keep y'all's eyes out. He is like a 5'9", you know, dual threat running back. He caught like, you know, I don't know, 8 passes for 200 yards in a game last year. He's had some of his best rushing totals in the playoffs. Kind of like a do-it-all dynamo, little Austin Eckler-ish in a way. He is, you know, he's one of the fastest guys in the state. I'm forgetting the exact number, but he had like a laser time, but like might have been like a 4.46 or something like that at a combine last year. Also a really good baseball player who won a state championship with their baseball team in May, and coming off an injury that he had late in last season, I think, or early in this season. So he's healthy off that and really hitting his stride. And then Torin Wright, who I know you've written a little bit about in your social media, you know, recruiting story, the edge rusher from A.L. Brown in Kannapolis. Just good to get guys like that in your program. I mean, like, you can't really go wrong when you're recruiting a 4-star guy who's, I don't know what he is, you know, 6'4", 200 and athletic as can be. And I believe they got him over like West Virginia and Duke. So that was a good Power 5 battle to win out on. And then obviously a lot of 3-star guys. Pretty interesting. The Isaiah Cruel kid from East Forsyth, as you know, that's been a program that's served them well in the past. And they're perennially a, you know, a contender in the 4A classification. So that's another guy who I could see having an impact down the line. And then just some interesting like situations where it seems like we were talking about earlier, like they found their guy and they like him. You know, they have their first commit in the class with an offensive lineman from Cary, Ryland Vann. His older brother Davin is on the team. You know, he's kind of an undersized center interior offensive lineman, but he's also like a state championship wrestler in the heavyweight division. You know, I watched one of his wrestling matches for a story, and he moves pretty well for a guy that's supposed to be on the offensive line. So I guess kind of the thinking there is like, if you can dance around a little wrestling mat and, you know, beat 5 guys in the span of 3 hours, you know, to win a gold medal, you're probably going to be okay, you know, pulling out on tosses and stuff like that. And then they have a kid playing running back at Southern Nash, Jackson Vick, who's verbally committed as a defensive back, actually. So just some, you know, some creative ways to find spots for guys and hopefully utilize them with those kind of unique talents on the side.
I wonder, I'm looking, you know, the quarterback commit from Georgia, MJ Morris, who's kind of this dual threat guy, which is not something that NC State really has had in their quarterbacks, or really have right now with their 3 guys. And now with Devin Leary coming back, this for this year and maybe even in 2 years. Do you think maybe, you know, MJ Morris looks at that and says, you know, have you heard anything that maybe he's thinking otherwise about not signing with NC State or anything like that? I mean, he seemed like a firm commit, but I wonder if you're him and you look at the guys ahead of you and you say, well, when am I going to end up playing on this team?
Yeah. Heard nothing of that sort personally, but I mean, I think just realistically, that's kind of the state of college football. So we'll be surprised if, you know, next fall, whenever it's, you know, him, if him, Ben Finley and McLaughlin are all still there competing for that starting quarterback job. I mean, it happened at UNC a few years ago. They had three kids competing for the job. Sam Howell won the job. And one of the two guys that didn't win the job, Cade Fortin, immediately decided to transfer. And that's like, you know, it's really natural, really fine. It happens all the time in college football nowadays. So I wouldn't be surprised if that situation plays out. And that's, like I said, that's not exclusive to NC State. That's really the way you kind of have to think about things. And especially with the, you know, the one-time transfer without having to sit out. And especially at a position like quarterback where, you know, if you're not the starter, you're chilling on the bench for 60 minutes every Saturday. Right. It's not like wide receiver where you can get out in that five wide set or contribute on special teams. So yeah, down the line, one of those dominoes is probably going to fall. Yeah. Cause I mean, Leary coming back, what does he have, 3 years of eligibility remaining on top of what he's already done or something crazy like that?
At least two, I believe. Yeah. He's a fifth year redshirt sophomore. So he'll be a redshirt junior next year. So at least two. And yeah, it's hard to know. I mean, these guys are like now going to be 30 when they leave college if they want to. But yeah, he's got at least two more years of eligibility, maybe three. I'm not 100% sure, but plenty of time if he wants to be there. I mean, I don't think anyone was super surprised that he was coming back, but he did,
yeah,
you know, statistically have a pretty impressive year. And, you know, NFL is always looking for quarterbacks. So, and he is like that pro style quarterback. So there was a potential that he could leave, opening the door for someone like Ben Finley or Aaron McLaughlin, who is that four-star quarterback. I think, is he out of Georgia as well?
Yeah, he was. And Morris was a four-star in the ranking. You know, obviously those are fluid and they,
right,
you know, they go up and they go down and they ebb and flow up until the end of that regular signing period. But Morris was a four-star at one point. He's probably right on the threshold of that right now. But yeah, I mean, consecutive, you know, four-star or super high three-star quarterbacks, that's a credit to their recruiting. I know Tim Beck, the offensive coordinator, has been a big part of the Morris commitment and the McLaughlin commitment the year before, both guys out of Georgia. So, you know, always good to get, you know, someone of that caliber at that position in the pipeline.
Do you have kind of a basic understanding of how these stars are doled out? Like, who is the wizard behind the curtain throwing out stars to people? Ah, you're a four-star. No, you're a five-star. I mean, I realize there's a lot of intangibles when there's the speed, size, and things like that, especially on the, you know, the offensive defensive line. Like, you know, you could be a great skilled defensive lineman, but if you're 5'10", 180 pounds, you know, you're not going to be considered a D1 guy. But how, I mean, like, how does a guy like MJ Morris be a four-star and then drop to a three-star? How does that work?
No, that's a great question. I mean, the one metric that I really use a lot in my reporting is 24/7 Sports' composite score, because you know, mm-hmm, that's lumping in rankings from ESPN, from Rivals, and from the top 247 rankings. So that's three probably different rankings and how the people at those places are all evaluating. But kind of roughly, and I think there's a good explanation of this somewhere on the 247 site, you know, every year that they probably peg anywhere from like 35 to 50 guys as five stars. You know, that is like your elite of the elite, the guys who could, you know, screw around and still, you know, win a game off their athleticism. And, you know, there's a few guys in the country that fit that build every single year. And then four star wise, you know, you're probably looking at, I don't know, 300, 400 guys in that range, maybe a few more hundred. And that's kind of a level below, you know, still high D1 caliber guys. And three star is really such like an all encompassing rating. Cause you know, like I was saying earlier, how many three star guys has NC State, you know, sent to the NFL at this point? You kind of lose track because they've done such a good job developing. Three star is really such a wide range. You know, you could really be a guy who barely, you know, has earned that ranking, or you could be a guy who, like we just talked about with MJ Morris, you know, injuries can sometimes play a factor in evaluation just of, you know, if people are out on the sideline scouting, you know, to tweak rankings, you know, if you're not playing and, you know, a guy two spots behind you is playing and playing well, you know, it's just lists shift all the time. So it can happen that way. But yeah, it's definitely, it's an interesting system. But I think the 247 composite is like a good baseline to at least get like a general consensus. Cause I mean, those are opinions coming from, you know, informed scouts and former coaches and people that are smart and, you know, understand it a lot better than I do. So I definitely do take some stock in that, but, you know, like a Wake Forest did, you know, they won their Atlantic division with a lot of three stars. So there's also a, you know, there's the whole coach argument of like, yeah, stars don't matter. I think it'll probably fall somewhere in the middle.
Right. I think there are times where, you know, you just see a player and you're like, that's what a five-star guy looks like. And, you know, he's already got those potential NFL, you know, the NFL body, the, you know, the mind for the game, that kind of thing. So, but then there's other times, I mean, you look at Akeem Ekwonu, who was a three-star lineman and is now going to be a top five, top 10 draft pick. And I would say, you know, NC State does a really good job of developing these players. I am curious though, you know, the conversation is always NC State, UNC, you know, that competition is there. And it feels like at least when it comes to four-star, five-stars, UNC is the clear winner in state. Is there, you know, UNC finishes, they have 6-6 record. They lose to NC State. Feels like all the momentum is with the Wolfpack. Does that translate to recruiting? Have you seen that? Or is this just kind of, this was just a 1 year, Mac Brown is still the star in the living room kind of thing?
Yeah. I mean, for this class specifically, it hasn't changed things, you know,
right.
You see them get their butt kicked by whatever ACC opponent and you wonder, but you know, then, you know, a week later they're landing, you know, a four-star wide receiver. So, you know, I think kind of the selling point, and you'll see this on Twitter from like UNC fans, and I'm sure it's like an internal selling point too. Just the idea that like, you know, that this is his third recruiting class. It's his best recruiting class in terms of, you know, 247 rankings. And just the idea that like, you know, quote unquote, like I have all my guys now, you know, that this is a team, you know, fully stocked up by me with a lot of good players. Not to say that he didn't have excellent players from Fedora. I mean, Michael Carter, Javonte Williams, De'Ami Brown, Daz Newsome, those are all insanely, you know, excellent recruiting pulls by Fedora's staff that helped Mac Brown out a ton. But yeah, in this class, it really hasn't changed much. You know, UNC's kept up that momentum. Got a lot of guys over the summer, you know, during all the preseason stuff. But even through the fall, they've kept it up. And, you know, a few of their guys have taken to Twitter through the fall with, you know, some form of, you know, there's no flipping me, like, stop trying. I'm, you know, I'm locked in. I saw Travis Shaw tweet that a few days ago. So it appears that they've kind of rebuffed any advances on those fronts. But I mean, the thing is, like, you know, UNC does it one way, NC State does it one way. And, you know, they've both been successful, NC State a lot more successful this year with the guys on their roster. Because, you know, how many of those are three-star guys? How many of those are former quarterbacks playing another position? You know, what is it? The tight end, Tootle, that was a quarterback and has been really effective for them. Penix, a lot of guys out of position that they've developed and put in new positions and, you know, are doing just as well. And obviously, you know, there was some Twitter discourse after the UNC-NC State game because, you know, Amezi, a former three-star receiver, is, you know, I don't know, I think caught a touchdown over a former four-star safety or something, and just kind of like a apples to apples. That's probably not like the best comparison, but right. Like, you know, just
and, you an know, example. I don't actually think that he did for the touchdown, but there was he did at some point because I remember seeing that and I was like, well, you know, and that's where you get the star ranking. You're like, just because you're a four star doesn't mean you're just like a better person than a, or, you know, Emeka has been, you know, he's been at in college for 5 years now. He's a little different than his high school ranking. And sure. I don't know. I mean, it's those star things that I think are just totally overblown or it's a good metric, but it's just like, it's used to diagnose too much, I think, but
yeah, you can't like line people up one-on-one and, you know, use that as the as
right. The, well, how could he make that catch? He's a three-star against a four-star. That makes no sense. You're like, well, you know, whatever. Yeah, I think all that stuff's pretty interesting. Do you get a sense talking to recruits, because as the statewide recruiting guy, you're not only doing NC State, UNC, you know, you're doing everybody. And you talk to a lot of these recruits. Do you get a sense what it's like to have Dave Dorn, Mack Brown come into your living room and what that pitch is like? Or, you know, I'm a big Texas fan growing up as a kid, and we would hear stories of, you know, Mack Brown walks in and he's just the most charming guy in the room. And, you know, now he's got his national championship ring and, you know, he can talk about Vince Young and all these guys. And does he just have kind of like a distinct advantage or over Dave Dorn, or, you know, how are their approaches different, at least in the sense that you've gotten?
I'd sure love to be a fly on the wall for both of
telling
those.
Telling you. Minutes, huh? did you watch any of the Beatles doc?
I've seen commercials, but I haven't seen it in full yet. No.
So if you are a Beatles fan, it is that. So you're like, huh, I wonder what it'd be like to be in the recording studio when they make an album. And you're like, oh, here's 8 hours of that. And it was incredible. And I want that of like, I want to be with Dave Dorn for 24 hours and just see what that looks like and see what the real pit. And it does seem to be working. And, you know, we all worked on separate projects about recruiting. And I talked a lot about Dave Dorn and the way that he sort of slowly has built his method. And it really is about not overselling things and being realistic. And that has really worked as far as with these 3-star guys. I'm like, listen, I know who you are and I know who you can be. Come here, we'll make it work. But it also feels like Mack Brown is just kind of like, hey guys, 5-star UNC, building a brand. Like there is, I feel like he comes in more with an exciting approach, but I really don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's method more than anything else. UNC can definitely, you know, it's fresh enough to where they can still sell a little bit of hope. Dorn, like you said, he's so, you know, deep into the tenure now that he knows what works. And I'm sure Mack Brown knows what works too. I mean, he's been a strong recruiter for a long time. But I mean, yeah, I think it just comes down to the brands, you know, NC State publicly and privately, I'm sure sells itself as kind of that gritty, hard nosed. I mean, you remember the Peyton Wilson, commitment and decommitment and recommitment to NC right. State craziness. And, you know, the quotes about NC State, you know, being like a real football school, et cetera. And
not showing up on a helicopter.
Section. Yes.
Right.
Stuff like that. And that's probably one of the more prominent recent head-to-head recruiting battles. I'm trying to remember exactly what the Athletic did that really good piece, you know, anonymous coaches on, you know, how UNC right. recruits, how NC State recruits. And I think kind of the general gist I remember from that was like, there wasn't a bunch of counter recruiting in there. And I think both those coaches, they've said that, and most would agree, like, you know, if you're spending, you know, the precious 3 hours that you have with this 5-star guy, like talking junk about a rival school instead of selling your own program, like that's probably not a good route to go. You know, you want to focus on yourself.
Right. Uh-huh.
You want to focus on yourself, want to focus on what you can bring. And there's a 2023 battle. They're both really hot on a Noah Rogers, who's a wide receiver at Rollsville High School in Northern Wake County. And he is, I mean, he's excellent. You know, he had 15 Power 5 scholarships halfway through his sophomore year in the spring because he was just like too good not to offer. And that's going to be one I'm excited to see, you know, how that plays out. UNC's offered, NC State's offered. Over the summer, UNC signed his older brother as a preferred walk-on, which is obviously a little, maybe a little strategic on their
little
part.
Little gamemanship, sure. Sure.
And then NC State obviously lands Lex Thomas, the 2023 quarterback from nearby Heritage. And, you know, those guys are big buddies. Like they've been playing since like Pee Wee football.
Right.
So both those teams have already kind of set themselves up, I think, to be, you know, longtime contenders and probably a few at the end that he's really going to consider. So it'll be interesting to see how that one plays out. But no, I don't have like there's no guy in the 2022 class that was like a specific, like, it's UNC and it's State and it's nobody else. Right. So I don't have like an amazing story of like, here's what it was like to have both those sides pulling at you. But maybe Noah Rogers will give me some of that later on. So,
right. Well, it is interesting to think that they don't seem to compete. And maybe I'm wrong to say this, but it doesn't seem like they compete for recruits as much as you would expect. It's sort of like they've picked their separate lanes and that's where they go. And I'm sure there's plenty of jostling that we don't see, but I don't know. Unlike Peyton Wilson, there's only a few examples that we can think of. And it's not like, oh, well, here we go again. The 10 guys who are going to choose between NC State and UNC. Is that kind of correct? Or am I just making things up?
Yeah, I think so. You know, UNC had offered Michael Allen, who ended up at NC State. But, you know, I think this is kind of an example of what you're saying, you know, at the same time that they had offered Michael Allen at NC State, they had also offered Omarion Hampton, another four-star recruit at Cleveland. And, you know, they were also heavily pursuing a four-star running back out of Virginia, George Pettaway. And, you know, things kind of just played out that way over the summer. You know, UNC made progress with those two guys that I'm sure were higher on their board. And, you know, national ranking wise, 247 composite wise, like were ranked a little bit higher than Michael Allen. He committed to NC State in June, you know, Marion Hampton committed to UNC in July. And then George Pettaway committed to UNC in, I want to say like September or October or something. So everybody got their guy, but I think that was kind of the example of how, you know, this is who UNC has their sights set on. This is who NC State has their sights set on. And, you know, who knows how all three of those guys will play. NC State's had plenty of in-state running backs that have kind of killed it, as you know. I mean, their current backfield is a prime example. You know, Naheem Himes, you can go back to him. But yeah, I think that was kind of an example of, you know, them setting their sights on guys who maybe, this is on UNC's part, setting sights on guys who have that higher ranking and being able to get them. Where NC State is, you know, in-state four-star running back, how are you going to pass up on that?
Right. It's interesting too, because I feel like NC State is about to be next year's UNC. You know, it'll help if they beat UCLA, but even if they don't, you know, they get the majority of their guys back, a potential top 15, top 10 team. I imagine, you know, they'll be right there neck and neck with Clemson, you know, for the Atlantic Division. And I guess we shouldn't discount Wake Forest, because that's what we did this past year and look at them now. But it feels like they're going to show up with a lot of expectations, even more so. Like this past year, they're like, we want to win an ACC title, saying all the right things, but I don't think there was a lot of belief that that would happen. And I feel like next year it's gonna be like, okay, this could really happen. This will be the year. And I wonder if they'll have a, you know, a UNC type season where it's like, oh, they're going to be the guy, you know, this is going to be the team. And then, you know, UNC loses their first game against Virginia Tech, and it was just this roller coaster ride. So I do see, as much as I know Wolfpack fans hate to, you know, have anything to do with UNC, I feel like there are a lot of similarities with these two teams going into next season. And I think UNC is going to reload too. And I mean, imagine that as the ACC championship game. How crazy would that be?
Wish it happened this year, but
right,
know, that became a total, you know, absolute no after week one. So
right. Absolutely. So yeah. is there anything else we, you know, that Wolfpack fans need to know about the recruits, you know, little gems that you've got? And I know you've got a couple little basketball tidbits as well.
Sure. Yeah. I'll share one story that I thought was a really good example of, you know, how exactly Dave Dorn and his staff do a good job, you know, recruiting kids. So this is Jackson Vick at Southern Nash High School. This is Bailey, North Carolina, Nash County. It's about 45 minutes from Raleigh, really rural. Southern Nash, home of Julius Peppers, famously, who was, you know, doing backflips all the way up and down the field, you know, at 6'5", 260, and being the best athlete in the state, you know, casually. But basically, the way that their longtime offensive coordinator, Brian Batchelor, who's now the head coach, he succeeded Brian Foster, retired just a few years ago. The way he put it about what he likes about the way NC State recruits their kids is just the idea that, like, they don't discriminate. And what he means by that is, like, Southern Nash runs an old school wing T-esque formation, you know, four or five guys at line of scrimmage, you know, 85% run. And for some schools, like, you know, that can kind of turn them off, or maybe they see that and they think, like, hey, that's not going to translate to our power five spread scheme. So we're just going to, you know, back off on that. And he was talking about how NC State, you know, with Bam Knight, who was at Southern Nash a few years before Jackson Vick was, you know, NC State was all in on him. And he was talking about how other schools, you know, power five schools, big schools, were kind of like, eh, like, I don't know, is he fast enough? Like, is this really going to work for us? Like, he's playing in a strange scheme. You know, now Bam Knight's, you know, the best kick returner in state history and could be headed to the NFL, has a great career regardless. So he mentioned it in that context. And then with Jackson, you know, that's a running back that NC State has recruited to play defensive back instead. You know, he at the time we had talked to him, I was probably, I don't know, they were maybe five games into the season. And Batchelor's like, yeah, he's maybe played four snaps at cornerback all season so far. we just don't need him there now. We need him at running back. But he was like, once again, that's the point. You know, they brought him onto campus. They, you know, tested him. He went through the drills. He went through a camp and they liked what they saw and they thought he was a positional fit at something he wasn't playing now. And they offered him and, you know, they locked up that commitment. And now he's going there next fall. And he's a Tech of an athlete, really nice kid. So it'll be interesting to keep up with that. And, you know, they also over the summer signed a third kid from Southern Nash. It was a defensive back, Darius Edmondson, who was at Louisburg at JUCO. So there's a whole other level to, you know, the idea that they don't discriminate. You know, not only is it a guy who played at a small school and ran in a wing tee, but, you know, he also spent 2 years at a JUCO. And, you know, they're happy to go after somebody like that, too, if they think he fits. So I thought that was like a pretty spot on example of kind of that brand that they sell and how that kind of plays out with a kid.
Well, awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for your time. As always, I'll see you around the old Zoom meetings and whatnot, but keep up the great work. And before we go, do you want to throw out Twitter handles or things you're working on so that people know what to look for in the future?
Yeah, sure. I'm blessed with a semi-unique name. So my Twitter name is just first last at Chapel Fowler.
Must be nice.
You'll get some, I'm no Dave T89 out here. I'm special. No, I'm kidding, but you'll get I do a lot of highlight videos out there. You know, I'll be at the state championships this weekend. So I'll get some Michael Allen highlights if NC State fans are looking for that. A few other things. And you also get some Nikola Jokic and Sopranos and Succession musings. So if any of that's in Dunkin' Donuts, so if any of that's your vibe, I'm there. And then my stuff is on wherever you read David's stuff. You know, that's where mine is too. It's on all the North Carolina websites and the USA Today network. So that's where you can find me.
So the real question, the big question that I have to ask you is, Kendall Roy dead?
Oh man. Have you read the Ringer piece, kind of reading the tea leaves after the episode?
No, but I listened to and for anyone who doesn't know, we were talking about Succession, which is on HBO. It's an incredible show. If you haven't watched it, you know, carve out 30 hours so you can catch up. But I have not. I listened to the podcast where he kind of laid out, you know, the idea. And the more he talked about why he would be dead sort of made sense because of that last conversation that he had with his dad. And there really was like no place for him to go. And I believe we had a conversation where I said, you watch out, Kendall Roy is going to die at some point.
Yes,
obviously I cannot think it out as well as these guys because the show is just incredibly nuanced and complex and interesting and hilarious. But I don't know. It's pretty 50-50. I wouldn't be surprised either way, but it would be a pretty Shakespearean death, you know, alone in a pool by himself.
Absolutely.
It's I can't wait till Sunday. I can't wait.
I'm going to get a rewatching of this most recent episode. And I think, probably a little bit confirmation bias, but I think if you watch it back again with the prior knowledge of how the episode ends, you know, you feel even strongly, even stronger that he is dead. The Ringer piece outlines some interesting stuff, like some interesting quotes, you know, from earlier in the season. Obviously every actor knows exactly what happens, but they're legally to the 1,000,000th degree bound to never say anything that's going to reveal anything. But I mean, Jeremy Strong's a really interesting, weird, introspective, you know, quoting random Russian poems dude. And he had some kind of prescient quotes throughout kind of this interview circuit he's done as the season goes on. I think it's about 50-50 as well. The thing is, if anybody can pull it off, you know, that writing and directing staff at Succession is one of the few that can. So yeah, like you said, I can't wait for Sunday to see what happens.
Well, at some point you got to think too that just with the arc of this show, there's one more season maybe. And this is kind of this, you know, this death would kick off what would be in a really incredible last season. But anyway, we'll save this for the Succession pod that we'll do after this. But I wanted to ask you about that. Cause I thought about you when I was watching it, I was like, ha, I told you. But anyway, Chapel Fowler, thank you so much for coming on to the pod, and we'll have you on again, I think, right after the early signing day, so we can really get a better sense of this recruiting class with NC State.
Absolutely. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
That's right. Take care, man.